Welcome to episode 33 of Mancy, a podcast about magic and the fucked up shit people did with it. In each set of episodes, we cover a different Mancy or method of magic. I'm RJ Walker. I'm a spoken word poet and writer. With me is my co-host, Elle.
I'm Elle Alder, a professional psychic and solitary eclectic witch.
In the last episode, we had Alchemy 101. Learning some basic Hermeticism and Gnosticism, and discuss the history of the Philosopher's Stone. Our understanding of science today is thanks to the work of alchemists attempting to unravel the secrets of the universe. Essentially, the things in the material world would affect the immaterial world and vice versa, thus the adage, as above, so below. And the alchemy magnum opus is the merging of the material and immaterial. The Philosopher's Stone, essentially, is an object made of the prima materia, the matter from which all matter is derived, the god goop that made the planet, that allowed God to make the planet, as well as the anima mundi, or the soul spirit of the world that connects all living things. Figuring out how to refine matter and one's spirit would allow someone to achieve divinity and live forever. You could also transmute lead into gold, or dissolve any substance to nothing with a legendary fluid known as an alkahest. The famous inventor of calculus and the father of physics himself, Isaac Newton, was also an alchemist, with one-tenth of his work being related to the study of alchemy and creating the Philosopher's Stone. He painstakingly translated hundreds of years of coded historical documents in an attempt to discover, you know, the stone, the Philosopher's Stone, the Infinity Stones. Like all the alchemists before him, though, he failed. And now, we're going to dive into the work of these alchemists as well and see what kinds of things we enjoy today came from the laboratories of wizards and occultists attempting to turn lead into gold and gain eternal life by tapping into the anima mundi and creating the prematuria to alter the god particle to be in the world. So,
Calm down, Men in Black. Okay, you sounded like the alien guy from water. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. He was probably trying to, like, obtain godhood by
he did want the galaxy. Wanted the galaxy on the kitty's collar.
See? You know, it really sounds like fucking crazy when you put it like that. But that's why I did that whole background in episode one.
So you know this is like a real thing so that you can people be like.
It is indeed crazy. And this is exactly how.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But for real, alchemy just walked so that chemistry, physics, and engineering could run. So here we go with part two of Alchemy, the blurry line between magic and science. The first alchemist I want to take a look at is going to be the OG. I brought him up in the last episode, but I'm going to go over his accomplishments, and that is Zosimos of Panopolis. He defined what alchemy was and established it as part of Gnostic mysticism and Hermeticism. According to Zosimos, alchemy was the study of the composition of waters, movement, growth, embodying and disembodying, drawing the spirits from bodies and bonding the spirits within bodies. His writings survive to this day. Then things get, well, occulty. he also believed fallen angels taught metallurgy, the study of metal properties and their production and purification, to women these fallen angels married. As in, you could just like marry a fallen angel, as in a demon, and he would teach you how to manipulate metals and like transmute them into gold and shape them however you want.
Huh.
He was like, get you a demon hubby.
Yeah, I was going to say, are there other benefits to marrying a demon?
Get you a demon man.
That can I don't know about that.
Turn lead into gold. Ancient Romans believed mystical sciences were evil, and alchemy was most definitely a mystical science. But Zosimos believed the goal of demons was to keep humanity ignorant, thus the Gnosticism, to prevent them from learning the secrets of the divine and, you know, keep us simply suffering in the mud in the horrors of the world. Alchemy, for him, was a way to fight demons and become divine. The next alchemist I want to talk about was written extensively about by Zosimos, and her name is Mary the Hebrew. According to Zosimos, she lived between the 1st and 3rd centuries AD. Maria believed that all matter was essentially the same, and their final form was just a matter of how things were combined and shaped. She kind of came up with the whole prima materia thing, mostly, like helped define it for alchemists in the future. She also thought that all matter was gendered male or female for some reason.
Okay.
And she was like, there is a gender binary. This rock, male. This tree, female. And it's probably like an actual, like, sexually male tree. I don't understand.
I guess...
It did work out in like, terms
but
of...
But where is she from?
I believe from Israel.
I think that depending on the language and how language is expressed, because having non-gendered, like, prefixes...
Oh, no. She had writings and writings and writings about this is gendered this way and this is gendered this way. Like, it was pretty clear. She was like... Objects have genders.
Yes, but also depending on the language that she is from, that's just something that she learned as innately part of her language.
Probably.
So.
Bold. Very, very likely. Where was it? Oh, yeah. And she thought metals were alive and they could die and reproduce like living creatures. To her, death was just like an ingredient you could add to things to make them change form, just as the body decays and changes form upon death.
Okay.
So, like, fire is an ingredient. So is death.
Okay.
Her discoveries include the Bath of Maria, or Kerotakis, which heated alchemic matter and collected vapor. It is a double vessel, airtight container with a sheet of copper upon its upper side that heats substances without scorching them. The Tribikos, a kind of distilling apparatus with like three had like three arms to create substances purified by this distillation. In the Bain Marie or Marie's bath, it's like essentially a double boiler, and also that double boiler is attributed to Maria the Hebrew. And all three of these devices are still used today.
I was gonna say, in chemical experiments. I feel like I know, like I can imagine what these things look like.
Maria the Hebrew invented distillation. If you enjoy drinking hard liquor, you can thank a 3rd century Jewish alchemist.
Crazy.
Crazy. Yeah. So like... Yeah, the shit worked in the 3rd century, and it still fucking works today.
Yeah, wow.
Meanwhile, in China, a dude named Yi Hong was also practicing alchemy. Alchemists in ancient China were seeking their own version of the Philosopher's Stone, an elixir of immortality. In the 300s, it was believed that a man could live forever given the right medical treatment. So, like, the problem is not that the human body fails. The problem is that we're failing the human body.
Probably true.
Yeah. The elixir of immortality was the ultimate panacea that could cure anything, including aging. Most Chinese alchemy was focused on medicine and prolonging human life. The idea was to, like, empower the spirit, distribute the spirit throughout the body, or otherwise combine the spirit with one of the classical elements such as fire. So something like acupuncture evolved from these beliefs, as well as moxibustion, which is – have you ever had a moxibustion treatment?
No.
Apparently they still do it today.
Okay.
It's the burning of dried mugwort on specific body parts. It's like put a little mugwort pile and like with the lighter and burn it on you.
You said perspific.
Perspific. On a perspific body part, a specific body part. They like light mugwort on fire.
I've never had one, but it sounds intriguing. I would probably do it, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another practice involved ingesting cinnabar or mercuric sulfide.
Fuck.
It's tolerable at low doses, but it's still toxic.
It's still mercury.
Yeah. In fact, well, no, because it's combined with sulfur.
Oh, okay.
Right. So like salt is still sodium. Like if salt was not sodium chloride, it would explode and kill you.
Yeah.
So
I'm not good at science. I bet everyone's learning that.
Yeah. Of course, they didn't fucking know that.
Yeah, right.
They didn't fucking know that you can combine things and it makes other things. Like, you know, individual elements can be very, very dangerous. But when you combine them with another element, they can be totally harmless. And in fact, might even be something your body requires.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tolerable at low doses. But still very toxic. Not as toxic as just ingesting straight mercury or straight sulfur, but still quite toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Those who died believed that they would be granted like access to the Taoist heavens for their consequential deaths. It caused severe pain, hallucinations, disordered thinking, and led to suicide a lot.
Yeah, I would never do that. If that was like the result, no.
I mean, they died how they wanted, I guess. Those who died – let's see. Oh, I already said that. Moving on. Chinese alchemy was concerned a lot with the anima mundi, the world spirit, believing the world itself was just one living organism that gave off its own spiritual energy. Magnets were channels for this energy, like proof that the energy like existed for them. And you could manipulate the flow of the world's energy using a technique called feng shui.
Okay.
Basically, organizing your environment to better allow the energy to flow like through it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we get a lot of like aesthetics from Asia mm-hmm. is like the idea of like the world energy flowing through the space.
Mm-hmm.
Like the studio is pretty chaotic right now. No feng shui.
No feng shui.
No feng shui at all.
It's getting caught on me right as it comes through the door, honestly.
Yeah. And then Gi Hong thought he had discovered the elixir of immortality. But what he actually discovered was quite the opposite.
Okay.
What Gi Hong discovered was a mixture of sulfur and saltpeter. A very specific mixture that would cause an explosion when a specific amount of force was acted upon it. He discovered gunpowder. And then promptly kept that shit a secret, knowing how fucked up and dangerous it was.
Oh, my God. Wow.
At least that's how the legend goes.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of legends attribute it to Gi Hong, but a lot of legends are like, we don't know who invented this, but we know it was a product of alchemy.
Okay.
Because they got it from some alchemical manuscripts.
Mm-hmm.
Centuries after Gi Hong's death, his discoveries were like unearthed and like decoded because even in China, they were like encoding this shit, right?
Yeah.
And Gi Hong was especially like, oh man, this has to be a deep ass code. Like somebody who is fucking smart and knows what to do with this should be the only one who uses it. But like they got it. And they deciphered it. They deciphered his codes, but he specifically coded his discovery to look like something else. By adding certain powders and salts, he could make the explosion appear colorful.
I was going to say, this is fireworks.
Yeah, Gi Hong knew that his discovery would be used as a fucking weapon and kill people.
But instead he was like, fireworks.
So he was like, oh, this is just like a really dangerous toy for just vapid amusement. Ha ha ha. Really fun. Nothing to see here. Just like, boom, sparks. Really fun. Anyway, go look at something else.
I'm terrified of fireworks. I don't like them. Yeah. When I was little, I would literally like hide. I hated them so much. But
yeah, of course, that ruse didn't last very long.
And people were like,
and it would eventually find its use in cannons and eventually guns. What he thought was the elixir of life was the elixir of death.
Yeah.
Still used for that purpose to this day.
Dude,
Gi Hong, you tried, and like, I don't blame you, Gi Hong. Like, Word up, homie. We
don't blame you for this. He has since incarnated so many times as like an anti-NRA activist.
God, he's like, damn, gotta stop this. Yeah.
He was Nelson Mandela. Just went to, yeah, like any peaceful person, he's like, gotta stop this.
Next, we're going to talk about a dude who is perhaps one of the largest contributors to chemistry as we know it today. Jabir the Alchemist. In the 800s, in the Middle East, published an enormous volume of alchemical and astrological discoveries called the Jabir Corpus. Jabir sought to find a solution to one of the oldest questions in alchemy, dating back to the beginning. What is stuff? And how do I change stuff into other stuff?
Yes.
Yes, the basics of alchemy. Jabir evolved the idea of the classical elements by defining each of the elements' natures. Fire's nature is dry and hot. Water's nature is moist and cold. And so on. Jabir was concerned with the transmutation of metals, mostly, i.e. turning lead into gold. But that's not all the alchemists were trying to do. That's just what we talk about because it's the easiest example. So a lot of times people think, oh, yeah, all they wanted to do was turn lead into gold so they could just have infinite gold. Mm-hmm. No, they knew that if they had infinite gold, gold might end up being intrinsically worthless if they could just, like, print gold. So what they really wanted to do with this transmutation shit was hack the whole process of mining and refining metal and creating it artificially for use in, like, tools and machines.
Okay.
So it wasn't just turning lead into gold. It was like, hey, let's bypass this super dangerous, horrible practice of mining and, like, the painstaking, arduous practice of refining all of this and, like, making steel and everything to just, like, boom, metal.
Yeah.
You know, metals were precious, even the ones that weren't gold, and they were very hard to get. So being able to just, like, manufacture them, like, that's more valuable than money. Mm. That's just valuable to, like, the progress of humanity. And that was mostly their goal. They weren't just like, hee-hee, Papa needs a new pair of shoes. Let's turn lead into gold. No, they were trying to, like, better humanity with this transmutation shit.
Okay.
Jabir subscribed to the sulfur-mercury theory of metals. It was believed that metals were created deep within the earth when sulfur and mercury combined with the anima mundi, or world spirit. Certain metals were considered noble metals, containing astrological connections as well. Gold was the sun. Silver was the moon. Mercury was the planet Mercury, and that's actually why we call it Mercury.
Hmm.
Tin was for Jupiter. And lead was for Saturn. And Mars is iron because, you know, Mars is the god of war and iron is weapons. Mm-hmm. Copper is Venus. I don't know why. I guess it's sexy. I don't know. Alchemists struggled to make these metals change into other metals. But Jabir had a theory. Now, of course, we know today that these metals are pure elements.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot change them by subtracting.
Yeah, you can only them adding.
By adding things and making alloys.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know that. So Jabir's theory was in order to change the metal, you must first change its nature. Lead was cold and dry, being Saturn. Gold was hot and moist, being the sun. What Jabir actually was discovering were the states of matter, solid, liquid, and gas, and how these states of matter change when you change certain conditions like adding heat or removing heat. Jabir and other alchemists would heat metals for days with absolute precision with no thermometers or modern equipment. It was difficult, sweaty work, but they noticed that the metals would change color. Black, then white, then yellow, then red, and then after red is supposed to turn into gold if you don't, you know, burn your house down or cause an explosion in the process by heating something up that hot for that long. Nobody ever got past the red stage, actually. It just became lava.
Yeah, molten.
It just became molten lava. Unfortunately, heating up wet lead did not turn it into gold. We would find that the lead would find the lead after not being heated up would just, like, return to its original state. And once the heat was removed. So Jabir believed there was a missing ingredient the alkahest, that would permanently alter a substance's nature. The alkahest could break down any substance into prima materia. And it was there that you could actually change the nature by adding the heat and moisture and things like that.
Okay.
Jabir added just a whole bunch to alchemy and science as we know it today. Like, he was like a polymath. Like, he was like doing fucking crazy shit with math. He translated several ancient texts on alchemy from ancient Greece, India, and China, combining the discoveries from around the world together. He also invented new equipment, things like beakers and Bunsen burners, which we still use in labs today. Mm. He discovered poisons and compiled a book of them, how to make them and how to spot them and their effects on the body and spirit. Jabir really established alchemy as a knowledge-making system, keeping the Gnostic value of knowledge as divinity without the Christian dogma. So Jabir was like, having all this shit coded and stuff is like, you know, it's cool and all, but like, we are creating new knowledge here and we should be able to compile that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now we're going into the extra spell. This extra spell is brought to you by me and my new book, The Ghost Was Always the Machine, available at rjwalkerpoet.com. We're going to talk about an alchemy creation that I think is just absolutely wild. I think the story of this alchemist is probably my favorite one, and it's just fucking mind-blowing to me. And the alchemist responsible is a dude named Henning Brand and his attempt to create the Philosopher's Stone using the human body's natural distilling techniques. Elle knows the story.
Yeah,
because I told
Elle
the
story.
The way
you just said that.
Ooh. Henning Brand was an alchemist in the 1600s who had a genius theory about how to create the Philosopher's Stone. There were two real schools of alchemy, metallurgy and pharmaceuticals. Metallurgy was concerned with, like, transmuting metals and, like, manipulating physical matter. Pharmacology had to do with prolonging human life, even bringing back the dead. It was believed that the human body, like the world, was empowered by a spiritual energy. Henning's first wife died, and he exhausted all of his money and resources researching ways to bring people back to life. And he was, like, the real Edward Elric.
Yikes. Yeah.
One of the most popular experiments alchemists did to bring people back to life was to burn green leaves and then attempt to revive them from the ashes with various, like, chemicals and stuff. Nothing really worked. Then Henning remarried a wealthy widow and the game was back on. He's like, Henning's got money again. Let's do
yeah,
alchemy.
Baby.
And his newest theory was a real juicy one. The missing ingredient in the Philosopher's Stone, the alkahest, must exist within the human body.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. We eat stuff. You're sipping on your coffee, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into your body.
Uh-huh.
And then it comes out totally changed.
Mm-hmm.
Just totally different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Your body is converting this, as if by magic, into piss.
Yeah.
You know, we drink beer, and it comes out as a golden liquid. Henning would use this distillation process of the human body to create the Philosopher's Stone. So he went to the nearby tavern and bought everyone around, on the condition that they piss into the buckets he brought with him. Beer worked the best because it turned urine gold, and cold urine must simply be the most magical of urines.
The most dehydrated of urines, rather.
But he would take it home and then refine it further to concentrate its power. Most of his experiments failed. And then he tried one that, like, turned urine into silver, and, like, he couldn't turn piss into silver, and that didn't work, so no dice there. Then a massive breakthrough. Henning Brand had created the Philosopher's Stone from piss. And this is his recipe. We have it.
We have it.
Let urine stand for days until it gives off a pungent smell. Step one.
Gross.
Step two. Boil urine to reduce it to a thick syrup.
Ew.
Step three. Heat until a red oil distills up from it and then draw that off. Step four. Allow the remainder to cool. where it consists of a black, spongy upper part and a salty lower part. How did he know?
How did he know it was salty?
He tasted it.
I'm sure he tasted it every step of the way in this science, you know.
Discard the salty part and mix the red oil back into the black material. Heat that mixture strongly for 16 hours. First, white fumes come off, then an oil, then the Philosopher's Stone. The resulting substance may be passed into cold water to solidify. And yeah, of course, like any chef, he just like tasted it along the way to like see what it would do to him, I guess. I don't know. Like see, oh yeah, this will help people refine
their
process.
Do I feel more alive now? Yeah.
Dude, this is like the ultimate commitment to urine kink I've ever seen.
It really is. It's extreme.
Dude, like just take a golden shower. You don't have to like heat it for 16 hours and taste spongy.
So what did he make? The actual Philosopher's Stone?
The Philosopher's Stone he created was awe-inspiring. Of course, it wasn't a real Philosopher's Stone because of course it fucking wasn't. But it sure seemed like it because what he actually discovered was phosphorus, a substance that would easily burst into flames unless properly contained. It would ignite like magic. Like he could like throw it like a magic missile, basically. Oh. He was like, holy shit, this is the most magical thing. I've invented the Philosopher's Stone out of pee. And then when it was contained, it would give off a constant pale green glow. And it was an ever-burning torch. He invented a fucking ever-burning torch in a glass tube. So to the people at the time, especially him, the substance came from the spirit of living people. So like, powered with spirit power from going through the human body, being refined there first, and then distilled using precise and controlled alchemy and heat, then it would give off a glow as if it were brimming with spiritual energy.
Yeah.
He is the one who named the substance phosphorus after the Greek word meaning light bringer or light bearer.
Mm.
Henning Brand had invented glow in the dark.
My water bottle glows in the dark. I've got a pee bottle over here.
Yeah, you've got a bottle with a storied history of urine collection and tasting.
Yay!
Like most alchemists, he kept his discovery a closely guarded secret. He coded his recipes in obscure pictures and allegorical anecdotes, and he was still obsessed with creating the Philosopher's Stone or even turning pee into silver. He continued with his experiments, just hemorrhaging money, even after discovering something that was just so fucking valuable. Near the end of his life, he was just completely destitute, unable to experiment any longer, and he sold the process for refining phosphorus for $200 and then died soon after.
$200?
$200. With a TH. It's like an old currency.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You thought
what?
I was making a mistake?
Thalers. Yeah, I was
T-H-A-L-E-R-S, like... T-H-A-L-E-R-S, thalers, is a currency.
Was that a lot of money or no?
No. No, it wasn't. Probably enough.
I've never heard of a thaler. I thought you were misspeaking. I was correcting you.
Probably enough to get by for like a little while. I don't know.
I wonder how much money he got when he married his second wife, though. Probably a lot.
Probably a lot. Probably
a lot more than 200.
Probably a lot of like fucking property and like business money and like constant streams of income, not just like, okay, I'm living in a gutter with a pig. I invented an ever-burning torch. If you could just give me a sandwich, I'll teach you how to make an ever-burning torch out of your pee.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah. So if you have glow-in-the-dark shit, I want you to know that you have it because Henning Brand collected buckets of urine and tasted them all while heating them up to make it happen. Enjoy your water bottle, L. Isn't that fucking wild?
That is wild, yeah.
And that was The Extra Spell, sponsored by me and my new book, The Ghost Was Always the Machine. This is an interactive book of poems that explores the ideas of a digital escapism in surviving trauma. The book bounces you between paper text and interactive poems on a website. There are several poems that you can only discover by paying close attention to the clues in the book. You can pick up the book at rjwalkerpoet.com. Thank you. Now, we're going to talk about some heavy hitters in the world of alchemy. We're going to jump to the Renaissance times and talk about Paracelsus, who has just the coolest name I can ever fucking think of. Paracelsus. Like, you have to be a wizard with a name like Paracelsus. Required. Anime fans might know him by another name. His birth name is Theophrastus von Hohenheim. Which also sounds like a wizard name.
Amazing. Yeah. How did he learn how to spell that when he was like four?
Theophrastus von Hohenheim. And yes, von Hohenheim is in Edward and Alphonse Elric's father in Full Metal Alchemist. Literally, he's based on Paracelsus.
Okay.
Paracelsus is one of those magicians that was just like earth-shakingly influential in all of our lives. His discoveries still affect us today, and his reputation as a diviner, magician, and alchemist have had huge influences in pop culture. Paracelsus wanted to discover universal knowledge that couldn't be found in alchemy's textbooks or like at academies in the time. He was hypercritical of existing knowledge, especially when it came to medicine. He subscribed wholeheartedly to the tenets of Hermeticism and the idea that the immaterial world could affect the material world and vice versa. He began experimenting and with like how different substances affected the human body specifically. He believed that mercury, sulfur, and salt were the root of all disease and poison in the world.
Okay.
Through rigorous experimentation, Paracelsus founded the study that we know today as toxicology. He also, where was I? Oh yeah. Basically, toxicology to determine what causes of death and what poisoning and diseases are.
Yeah.
Basically, because of Paracelsus, we have Dr. House.
Wow.
Wow. He also invented laudanum, or also known as tincture of opium, creating the basis for painkillers and anesthesiology that we know today.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. That discovery alone is enough to, like, permanently change the course of human history.
Yeah.
And, like, I could go on about Paracelsus. He's an absolute unit. But, like, this could be an all Paracelsus episode. And maybe we'll have that in the future. Next, we're going to talk about a dude named Johann. I think you might know or like this one, Elle.
Okay.
Johann and his story also just like fucking wild.
Okay.
Johann was practicing magic in the 1400s, which is a dangerous time to be practicing magic because of the Inquisition. He published several books on alchemy. He was a scholar named Magister Artium, basically like a master's degree in the arts from Heidelberg University for his contribution to the performing arts. However, there is no particular notable alchemical discoveries like under his name that we could find. We think a lot of them he did under like pseudonyms, but we don't know which ones were actually attributed to him. He was known, however, for his impressive magic tricks like stage magic and set design. It was said that he created a flying chariot for an old Greek play that was so realistic it seemed to be done by magic. And what we know about him mostly is told through slanderous and libelous publications from his academic rivals. Literally all we know about him is how bad people roasted this motherfucker.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow.
One publication accused him of being a homosexual and having sex with his male students. Mm-hmm. And that caused him to lose his teaching position.
Mm-hmm.
He relied on making money from reading horoscopes and casually conducting alchemical experiments and teaching basic alchemy to like lay people and like doing magic tricks for the town. And his magic tricks were like the talk of the town. People were like, this guy is fucking Gandalf over here, like fucking doing all this shit. Impressing people all over Germany. Still, the roast of Johann persisted. And the church accused him of blasphemy for practicing magic and alchemy. The most prevailing rumor surrounding him was that he, Johann Georg Faust, sold his immortal soul to the devil. Yeah, in exchange for his magical power.
I love Faust.
I know. He became feared and even shunned at times. Really, he was just a dude who knew a lot of things. He wrote a lot of really good, important books. And he did magic tricks like a boss and like had dope set design.
When I was going to school for theater, I wrote research papers on Christopher Marlowe and Faust. And actually, when you said that he was accused of being a homosexual, I was going to quote, because there's really like a famous quote about Christopher Marlowe that he said it. All those who love not boys and tobacco are fools. And so, you know, can't argue with Christopher Marlowe on that one.
Yeah.
Wow, so, that's cool.
Yeah, it was like this rumor that he was like a servant of the devil, and that's how he got his magic to like stop people from like learning alchemy from him and getting horoscopes and doing like going to see his stage magic.
I would be best friends with this demonized person for sure.
There were also rumors that he traveled with a dog that would turn into a humanoid demon goblin and obey his commands.
That's actually my dog.
That's actually your dog. Yeah.
That's what he is. That's why I have him.
Still, he would continue to work in magic and alchemy. In around 1540, he was in a hotel conducting an alchemical experiment, and that experiment blew up in his face. Literally. He was blown to pieces, just like shredded apart.
Oh my God.
In a manner so grisly and horrifying, it was said that the devil himself came to collect and tore Johann's body apart to rip out his soul and drag it down to hell.
Probably just was an accident.
It was most certainly just an accident, like messing with like chemicals he didn't know.
What they would do. Doing.
It also didn't help that his hotel room smelled like sulfur from the experiment.
People are like, for sure, the portal of hell has opened up here.
For sure. Fucking Satan showed up and ripped this man's soul from his body.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, there are chunks of Johann Georg Faust just painting the fucking wall. It was, like, considered grisly. People were like, it doesn't even look like a man anymore. Like, it was bad.
Wow.
Yeah, so even after his death, the roast of Johann Faust would continue with the printing of a small pamphlet that would cement him into our culture forever. The libelous pamphlet was called The History of Dr. Johann Faustus, and that would cement him in human folklore forever as the man who sold his soul in exchange for magical power. And then was gruesomely collected by the devil.
I have that book, or I have like a translated version of it.
Of the pamphlet?
Yeah, when I was writing a book, I might have stolen it from a library. Maybe. I didn't steal it. I just never gave it back. So it's probably up in my room.
Yeah. And obviously this like pamphlet to like roast this motherfucker after his death and like shame him for doing magic.
People just didn't like him.
Well, there were all these – basically the pen is mightier than the sword here.
Yeah.
Where like all of his academic rivals were like, I fucking hate you because he was so much better at them than everything.
So
like the best way to take him down was to like call him a blasphemous son of a bitch that sold his soul to the devil.
You know, people have tried to do that to me and I just kind of let them and then I'm like
Right, but you don't have to, like, impress a court of aristocrats in order to not get burned alive.
So, like, that's the thing that's, I think, hard for people to wrap their minds around is, like, how truly terrible it was. Because that's, like, what Dr. Faustus was, is it was just, like, warning people, like, stay away from this, don't do this. Be in control, go to church, listen to your kings and queens. Like, make sure you do this. Make sure you're an obedient citizen. That's what they wanted from people. And that was, like, what they wanted from Christopher Marlowe. So much of that was just, the world is a very different place now.
Yeah. And of course, Christopher Marlowe's play, inspired by this pamphlet, The Tragical History of Dr. Faustus.
Yeah.
So, did not contribute much in the way of inventions that we know of.
But very significant.
Very significant in the humanities and pop culture.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's super cool.
And finally, we're going to talk about another legend in alchemy and just magic in general. John Dee. Probably as influential as Aleister Crowley, I would say, just much older. John Dee was a court magician for Queen Elizabeth in the 1500s, and that afforded him certain privileges other alchemists and magicians did not have. Like, you had to be fucking slick as oil to be the court magician for the Queen in the 1500s. That afforded him the protection of the court and helped assure what happened to Faust would not happen to him.
Yeah.
It happened to him anyway later. He would continue to be a noble and respectable thinker as well as a stalwart Christian. He had to, like, be super, super Christian so that people didn't accuse him of dealing with the devil.
Yeah.
He introduced ideas of Gnosticism and Hermeticism back into Christianity in the form of academic Christianity, asserting that the study of mathematics was the closest one could get to speaking the language of God. Which, like, wow. I don't know, probably. I think when
I guess because it's like has logical conclusions.
Yeah, I think when aliens arrive, mathematics might be a communication system that we could use.
Well, because no matter what, yeah, language.
Yeah, no matter what, math is true.
Yeah, I'm fucked if that happens. And all we have is math, I'm fucked.
We're fucked. One of the ways he also contributed was through calendar reform. Most astrological calendars were based on the idea of the sun and planets revolving around the earth.
Mm.
Though he never outwardly supported Copernicus because, like, scandalous.
Can't, yeah.
He so quietly reorganized the calendar to fit a heliocentric model. I honestly wish I had more time to talk about Dee's life and accomplishments because it's like – it's fucking wild.
Mm.
But I think I'll save them for another episode that's just like the all John Dee episode where I don't have to do like fucking stacks of background in order to understand the magic
to even,
we're talking about.
Talk about it. From now on, this is like we're laying the bricks, right?
Yeah.
And now we're going to be like, if you don't know, just go back. Like listen to episode 30.
And this is going to be the case with astrology too where it's like so fucking
astrology
complex.
Astrology has so much. And there's so many different systems to it. And yeah.
And it's like exists all over the world. And there's so many different ways to do it. Like, yeah, alchemy and astrology are some big, heavy fucking hitters that require a lot of background. Anyway, another thing that John Dee did with alchemy was use it for divination. He would perform metallurgy with lead by melting it and then casting it into water and scrying the shapes and tendrils of the lead. The idea that Dee was changing the nature of the metal, like Jabir before him, changing the lead from cold and dry to hot and moist, to take steps toward creating the prima materia and see how the anima mundi reacts to, you know, what messages the world soul has for him through like metallurgy in this way. And it just so happens we ordered a metallurgy set.
Yeah.
Similar to the one John Dee would have used back in the 1500s to perform metallurgic divination. And it's still in the mail.
Yeah. So this form of divination, I guess our family's best friends when I was growing up, they worked like the wife in this family worked with my mom. And the wife was from Austria. The father was from Iran. And we were like really good friends because their kids were the same age as my brother and I. So we would like always hang out. And we did like New Year's one year. And our friend was like, this is what we used to do in Austria. You have to like melt the lead. Then you drop it in the water. And the water will like whatever you get is what your year is going to be like. And I remember I did it when I was, I think, 8. And I got little teardrops and an iguana. I just have this memory from it. And I was like, what is this? Let's find one. So we had to like hunt it down on Etsy. There's like one shop selling it in France.
Yeah.
We for sure bought it from that person. We are waiting for it in the mail.
And so we're going to – and because that's also like low-key not appropriate for the recording studio setting.
No, you can't like warm up lead in here.
We're going to do that like over the stove at home.
Yeah, with some gloves on.
See, like if we learned anything from the tragical history of Dr. Faustus, it is safety equipment.
PPE. We all know what PPE is now.
Fucking safety equipment. And even if you look at Isaac Newton, he's just like infested with lead poisoning from doing alchemy shit.
Does it matter? No, because he made cool shit.
Literally, they found poisons all over his documents. Like
Of
the documents Isaac Newton worked on have to be handled with gloves because you could get lead poisoning from touching the papers he wrote. He was so fucking cracked out on lead poisoning.
Wow. Well, anyway, we're waiting for that. And we're going to do it. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome. So we're going to cut to that when we get it.
All right, and we are back in the laboratory, in the alchemy lab, and we're going to do some molybdomancy.
Molybdomancy.
Which is a type of metallurgy that fucking John Dee used to do, which involves taking molten lead. I think druids did this too, but with wax. And then it turned into like a thing that you do with lead because alchemy. But we've got a metallurgy kit for all the way from France. Elle, yes. Would you light the heating candle?
Yes.
AKA the 1500s Bunsen burner. And just so the listeners know, we are taking safety precautions. We are wearing gloves because we are playing with lead. All right, Elle, now we just heat this up over this fire. Normally, there would be like a little stand that you would have, but I guess the people in France were like really cheap.
So we paid $45 for this and the shipping was free. And I wondered how it was possible that the shipping was free, but it's because the amount of things that she gave us was like $5 for the stuff.
Yeah, I feel like if I knew where to just buy lead, I bet I could buy some at like Home Depot or something. I could actually use my wax candle stamping set that I use for like all my books. And then I could like...
It's going.
It's going. Melting. It's melting. It's getting hot. we have locked the beast back in Tartarus.
The middle head of Cerberus, a.k.a. my dog, is no longer allowed at recording sessions after last week's recording session.
Oh, wow. It's looking all liquidy. So the piece of lead they gave us was like a half sphere, but it's like hollow, right? It's not just like a whole half sphere chunk. So once this is all heated up and melted, we're going to cast it into this bowl of ice water I have with me. Hopefully the heat of the lead won't crack the bowl. I don't think it will, because I'm pretty sure they used glass bowls for this too, or at least clay. Oh wow, it's getting real liquidy.
It is very liquidy, isn't it?
Extremely liquidy. Oh, there it goes.
Bye-bye. Fully okay, wait, collapsed. What is Christopher's question?
Oh shit, John, I need you to take a video. Oh shit, you can't take a video because, say hi to John, everybody, my other roommate. I'm wearing gloves and I like can't access my phone because I do everything with fucking...
Hey, I've got video on my phone, so it's fine.
Okay, so John, go ahead and start taking a video. Are you videoing?
Yes.
Okay, we got video. So we've melted down the lead, the first piece of lead that we have. Elle is going to cast it into this bowl of ice water and then scry the shape. And there's like a list of what all the different shapes mean that came with the metallurgy set.
Oh, I'm nervous. I don't know why I'm nervous. What if I do it wrong?
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah, dump it. Fuck, why did you do it like that? Oh my god. Why did you fucking do it like that?
I don't know, I'm sorry.
Jesus Christ.
Is that how you should do it? It's a fish.
You just fucking plopped it in there like you slam dunked it like fucking Michael Jordan. Jesus Christ. It scared the shit out of me. I told everybody we were doing this safely, and then you go and you do that.
I'm so sorry.
I thought you were gonna like gently pour it, but instead you were just like, yeet!
You're so mean. I'm sorry.
I'm in my direction.
It was more than it was at you. I'm very sorry. I thought I was tilting it, but I was nervous about like how liquidy it is. I don't like fire. Fire makes me nervous.
Okay, maybe
fire and mirrors.
Maybe I should be doing the fire part.
Well, too late now.
Too late. Well,
we have a fish
for the next piece. Okay, so what is?
Do we have a fish and a hummingbird?
Oh, you got the video?
I did.
Oh, but we need the video of the scrying.
Oh.
So we can see what it is. No, it's just black on the bottom.
I would like to know what cracked.
Nothing. That's the sound of the metal.
Oh.
That was the sound of it going into the ice water.
Oh.
All right. So we are back. Elle, let me just take that from you.
Well, I didn't want to. It was like leaving residue on stuff.
So what do you got? What do you see?
What was the question?
Okay. So Christopher's question. That's probably a good thing I should have said before we started.
Yeah, I was asking you to.
I just got nervous. I got distracted. Well, I got distracted with trying to get the video. John, watch your arm and the candle. Yeah. Okay.
This is so chaotic.
A lot of cooks in the kitchen right now. Christopher is a... He's an amazing poet and a friend of mine. We've met at several poetry tournaments. But he is also a science teacher. He teaches, like, 14-year-old kids science. And he has time for one more unit this semester.
Okay.
And so he wants to ask the space magic between animal physiology, electromagnetic radiation, and the solar system, how would his 8th grade students react? Like, between those three, which one do you think?
Say it again.
So he's considering teaching units on animal physiology, electromagnetic radiation, or the solar system for his 8th grader's final science unit.
Animal physiology, 100%, because that's a hummingbird, and this list says nothing about a hummingbird. So,
okay.
Animal physiology.
Animal physiology? Why do you say animal? I mean, it's a hummingbird.
Yeah.
That,
it's not a it's planet.
It's that simple?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Then. I don't know. What did you think?
I thought you were going to, like, go off, like, your eyes roll back in your head and fucking, like, ghosts come out and shit. I don't know.
Has it ever happened?
I mean, we did, like, the whole last Ouija board episodes and, like, the automatic writing and...
It's a hummingbird.
It's a hummingbird.
What
so,
do you see?
So, animal physiology. That does actually look like...
It looks like a hummingbird.
It actually kind of looks like a narwhal.
Yeah, it does. From this angle. I think it depends on how you look at it, because it also looks like a fish, like, diving. Like a dolphin, mm-hmm. maybe, from this angle. It just looks like a bunch of different kinds of birds. Or animals.
So animal physiology, we're confirmed there. How will the students react to the animal physiology?
Oh, I think very excitedly.
They'll be very excited about
it. Yeah, well, I think that maybe not the subject, but I think that the way he teaches it will be really exciting. And so he needs to find something kind of fun and engaging. And maybe some, like, weird fun facts about hummingbirds and narwhals and stuff. Like, weirdly connected different things.
Hmm. Well, he had one other question.
Okay.
So he's considering moving out of state for a PhD program.
Okay.
And he wants to know how that will affect his family or if that's even a good idea at all.
Okay. Why don't we take this one out? Do we have like a piece of... Oh. Do you want to do the fire bits?
Yes, I will do the fire bits this time. All right. We're heating it up. This one might take a little bit because I did dunk the... spoon thing in water. That was the quickest reading you've ever done, ever. You were just like, hummingbird, animal physiology, next. I guess it is that simple.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it was a pretty straightforward question, right? I think the water is making that sound.
Yes, it's because sizzling. It got wet. So the water is reaching its boiling point. Or the water's nature is changing.
Alchemy.
The water's nature is changing from cool and moist
to hot and dry.
No, hot and moist. That's what it becomes. Hot and moist because fire is hot and moist. Or is it hot and dry? The sun is hot and moist. Fire is hot and dry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very important distinctions being made here. I don't know. I mean, it was pretty straightforward. He was like, which one of these... Animal bodies, and then there's an animal body. Like, that's... Yeah.
Yeah. I guess... it is that simple. But this might be, like, a big... I mean, I'm not saying that, like, specific science units aren't going to be, like, earth-shattering, like, things for these kids.
You don't think animal physiology... But what if you talk about, like... Birds have hollow bones.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to be important for these kids to know, and you're right, they're probably going to be very excited about it.
It's interesting, yeah.
But at the same time, this question is going to impact Christopher's life specifically.
So you're hoping for a more thorough answer?
Yeah.
Well, he's also not going to...
Probably no specters.
Sorry, I had to plop my cat down off the counter.
He's helping. He's coming to melt some lead.
He's technically not.
Want to melt some lead later?
Oh, man. That's that's 100% how John D. picked up chicks.
Yeah. Hey, like, want to melt some lead later? I'll read your future.
Pray tell, my lady, wouldst thou like to melt the lead with me in mine laboratory?
Yeah.
Inspector is so mad he can't be on the counter.
He's not allowed.
And he might be banned from all Mancy
recording
episodes.
Sessions too.
Okay. We got a nice little pool here.
Gently.
And now I will gently put it in the water.
What was the specific question again?
So the question is, what would happen if Christopher took a PhD program out of state, and how would that affect his family?
Do you see the, like, slashy face?
The slashy face?
Yeah, the, like, the two eyes and then the line, like if it was like a...
It looks like a rhinoceros skull on a stick.
Okay, that side does look like that. That is true. It also just looks like, from this angle on that one, it looks like...
A scorpion tail?
No, if you look at the hat, it looks like a witch hat. And so it looks like maybe like this person dissolving from the witch hat like into this other matter over here and then a fish. So transformation. Like, I feel like it would be really transformative. I feel like there's like an anatomical heart right there. Sorry, some wild imagery. Okay, let's see.
Let's refer to the paper.
You will fall in love in the coming year, is the heart.
Fish.
Gaming or gambling luck.
Okay. So, go to Atlantic City, I guess, Christopher.
I don't see anything about a skull.
What do vegetables look like?
It looks like they're in alphabetical order.
What's EP? No, because they're all in like different...
Oh, categories.
So those are, yeah.
Sailboat. Scissors. Snake. Stag. Stairs. A steamboat.
Maybe a tree. Is there a tree on here?
These sound like words to like activate the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Going down the list. You know, I actually think that it's going to be good, but I think don't underestimate how difficult it's going to be. I think that's like the big thing is that there's a lot of opportunity, there's a lot of luck, but the skull to me obviously is death. The like anatomical heart to me is a little bit like kind of like bleeding for it, like you have to like earn that, or that like there's just going to be heartache and sorrow leaving it behind. This skull is death, which is transformation, change, letting go of things that don't work for you. There's literally like a slashy face, smiley face, so that like you know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea what a slashy face slip smiley face is.
Do you have a pen?
Okay.
Like this.
Elle is going to draw the symbol. If you get the symbol on film.
That.
Okay. So awkward
like,
face.
Yeah.
An awkward face. So overall, your message to Chris is...
I think that it can be something that brings a lot of really solid opportunity, but you're going to have to figure out if that's going to be worth the turmoil of your family, because I don't think that it will be without its sacrifices or for anyone. And so it's like, just make sure that everyone's on board. I would say like having conversations with your family and being like, okay, for really reals, how do we feel about this? Like vote of the house kind of a thing, and making sure that everyone kind of gets a choice, even if it feels like, I don't know, know, even if you're like, yeah, it doesn't matter, we're moving anyway, at least having a conversation about it and talking about everyone's concerns will make sure that people feel like they're part of the decision. So then when you get there, it'll feel a little bit more like you're a team. And that's going to be a really important part of this, is that everyone works together and everyone agrees this is for the best of everyone involved. And I think as long as you do that, the risks will definitely be worth the rewards. But it's got its challenges.
Okay. Well, Christopher, I hope that this this was a useful reading for you, and I especially hope that your kids enjoy animal physiology, should you decide to listen to the metallurgic omens regarding what you should teach your kids. Hey, kids. I had a...
The demons picked.
I had a witch do a spell with molten lead to determine... don't touch your face. Careful.
I haven't touched it, have I? Yes, I am. Oh, my God.
Ella's going to wash her face. and that concludes our reading. I hope that was super helpful for you, Chris. Let me know how the last science unit of the semester goes. Actually, JK, those were pretty short. So we're going to do ones for ourselves and see what we get. Elle is putting on new gloves.
With wet hands. Because I touched my face with my lead hands and I had to wash my face.
Oh, man.
Imagine being this dumb, but yet this pretty.
When I was an EMT, I fucking lived in these gloves.
Is it like your worst nightmare?
Not really. They were kind of like a safety blanket for me.
Yeah, like your shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, Omega Mart.
You've no idea. By the way, we got tickets to the House of Eternal Return in Santa Fe for my birthday. So I'm really excited.
I'm so excited.
They just released a Making of Omega Mart video.
Did?
And like, apparently it was a thing that they did as a joke in Santa Fe in 2009. This is actually the third Omega Mart.
Really?
Yeah.
So do they just keep adding to the story each time?
No, the first time it was like a very small installation as a joke. But people thought it was an actual grocery store. And then the next time they made it just a little bit bigger. And this was before Meow Wolf was even a thing. And it was just like the Santa Fe Artists Collective or whatever. Mm. And then they were like, you know, people are actually buying this stuff. Are like joke products for a good amount of money. Are like empty bottles of fake detergent.
I got a can full of the inevitability.
Nice. And a can of inevitability.
Yeah.
My favorite detergent was plausible deniability laundry detergent.
I got our friend a rose beef patch. Oh, he was so excited. Are you going to do one with us?
Sure.
Okay.
Taking a minute to heat up, but I think it's because of the weird shape.
Yeah.
That it has taken on. When a little of it melts, though, I find that all of it, like, follows suit.
Yeah, it does.
Like, it all just, like, clumps together. I'm certain this definitely seemed magic to fucking people in the 1500s.
It's pretty dope, actually, to watch. So, yeah, we found this because, as I mentioned earlier, we did this when I was little. My Austrian friend... for New Year's, like, we would spend all of the holidays together, and one New Year's, this is what she wanted to do to predict our futures for the year. I probably still have my iguana somewhere because I saved it. It really did look like a hummingbird.
It did. It also looked a lot like a narwhal.
Mm-hmm.
Just from my angle, the narwhals are great.
You should tell them to watch the whale docuseries. Disney Plus.
Huh?
Because they specifically mention
werewolves.
Probably
should have chose
class.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell Christopher that.
Yeah, it's the end of the school year. All they do is watch movies anyway, right?
Mm. And take standardized tests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will it melt the second time?
Yes, it will melt the second time. But
it's in such a weird
shape. It's in a weird shape. So the heat is not transferring as quickly.
Should I move it? should be like a little more.
There you go.
Yeah, is that good?
The candle went out.
Oh. Do you see how flimsy this is?
Yeah, this is so flimsy.
It really is. This is literally something they got for 25 cents.
Easily, yeah.
You
this
know
is,
what,
This
though?
Is a fucking heroin spoon, is what this
it,
is.
It kind of is, except the wooden handle of it makes me nervous, because you're playing with fire around it, you know?
Yeah, you definitely don't want a metal handle.
No, that's true.
A wooden handle is probably
I guess plastic
ideal.
Would also melt.
Yeah, so wooden handle, actually probably good idea. Yeah, man, that shit I found out about the matches has been fucking me up. That, like,
well, there we go.
Matches were one of the most popular ways to kill yourself, because you just bite the heads off and die.
Yeah. Fuck.
Okay.
There you go.
Oh, there we go. It's settling. We got a gloobery boy.
Get the guy, yeah.
Trying to, like, absorb him into the blob. Oh, we lost our candle firelight. Oh, no. Gotta keep the heat. Gotta keep the heat.
Keep the heat alive. Get outside. Get over.
Get absorbed into the blob. Join the collective. All right, we've got a pretty liquidy mass. Okay, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What is it? What is it? Somebody has to say it out loud. Somebody has to say it out loud.
It's a dick. It's a dick. Massively.
I don't think
ejaculating.
I don't think it's a dick.
Okay. Testicles, shaft, head. Ejaculation.
That's a dick that has exploded, is what that is. That's a dick where somebody put a firecracker in the dick.
It looks like spider a dick. Penis.
Spider dick.
I guess I can kind of see if you, like, stop right here and then the rest is just ejaculate frozen
yeah,
in time.
Yeah, exactly that. Here, wait, I need to take a picture of it because that's fucking hilarious.
Okay. So, anyway, whose reading is this for?
I don't know who wants to claim it.
I'll claim it.
Oh, yeah?
What does it mean?
I
mean, I poured it. If I poured it, it's mine, right?
I don't know. You wouldn't let me pour, so... you know? So. I will pour it, not sploosh it. I promise.
God damn it. I can't take video with my fucking gloves on. I got it. All right, so this is my metallurgy reading, my
so,
molybdomancy.
This, testicles, and then shaft, and then the head of the penis right there. And then just so much ejaculation.
It's just ejaculating. It's like a hentai level of ejaculation.
It is. So penises are used for creative energy in magic. And it's for breathing life into things. And so...
Oh, is that what they're for?
I mean, some people use them that way. I don't. I'm just kidding. That's what they're used for, like, in a magical sense. When we use them as symbols, when people use them in magic, it's fertility. It's making something. It's breathing the life into something. And so if you think about that, like, kind of transference of energy, it's like having something to put energy towards and feeling like, okay, this is... where I'm directing my energy, this is how we're going to be able to do these things moving forward. So I would say creative projects are coming in. I would say general excitement coming in. Some things that are just like good, happy shit going on.
Okay. Well, Elle, why don't we do your reading next?
Okay.
Let me just get this dick out of here.
Oh, man. How are we gonna... Does it break? Oh, okay.
It's quite malleable. Lead is extremely malleable. Okay, El, do you want to hold it over? You can do the fire thing this time. And I am going to take my gloves off and film this proper.
Okay.
All right, so El is performing metallurgy, specifically molybdomancy, which is the melting of lead, getting molten lead, and then casting it into a bath of cold water, and then scrying the shape of the molten lead. So we'll come back when it's melted.
That's a penis.
You know, I still think that's a little bit of a stretch.
But, you know. I mean, it's a stretch to penis. Ah.
Hilarious.
I am. Do you want to go let my dog go out? Oh no, we're recording.
Yep.
He's banished from recording
sessions.
He's
banished. I had to like put salt over the threshold of the door so that
he
wouldn't get out.
Dude, Cerberus is like a fucking... He's a thing, right?
Yeah. He's not allowed around people. He just stays in his dark little cave. And occasionally he comes out to play. And when he comes out to play, it's only slaughter. Like, I know when it's new toy day for Rocco, when there's just toy guts all over the floor. Just like fluff massacre everywhere. The most horrifying was when Elle got him this toy that is a bunch of squirrels inside of a log. And the dog has to like go into the log and get the squirrels out. And it was like a family of 12 squirrels. And every one of those 12 squirrels got decapitated. Every single one of them. There were squirrel guts everywhere. He spent weeks systematically committing squirrel genocide.
Yeah,
he really did, actually. He took the heads and the tails off and then slowly pulled the fluff out and the squeakers. He has, like, almost a medical precision way of, like, taking apart squeakers.
Yeah, once he has found the squeaker, he rips that out first. And then he attacks the squeaker itself like a fucking psychopath.
Well, he takes the, like, neck of it, how it has the little squeaky, like, the apparatus, I guess, that makes it squeak.
He has to disable the squeaker.
Yeah.
He rips out the little, like, air tube that causes squeaking and then spits it out triumphantly as if he just tore out the creature's fucking heart.
He really does. He is truly just... the bastion of hell, honestly. The bastion of hell, does that work?
The Behringer? No. The guardian?
He represents everything hellacious. You know, people are like, oh, my dog is the best dog. No, he's the worst dog. He's the worst version of a dog, but he's my buddy. This is taking so long. Did you get too hot?
The lighter was getting hot.
We have the...
Oh, yeah, that's what I got the stick for. I got the lighter stick for this exact situation. Oh. We keep it by the spoons, apparently?
I don't know. I just put it there.
I didn't put it there.
I did. We got some spillage.
Some spillage?
Yeah, the wax from the candle.
You know who else has some spillage?
The dick.
British Petroleum, when they spilled... thousands of gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico, decimating wildlife to this day.
Yeah, they did.
And then they rebranded and changed their company color to green.
So
pretend that didn't happen. Finally, this is what happens when it gets wet. Yeah. Right? Is it takes longer to melt because you've got to wick off all the water.
Can you... Yeah, I get the... Yeah.
Yeah, coming at it from both sides.
I think it's the move.
Like double teaming it.
Yeah.
That's how you get it when it's already wet.
When it was going back in, I saw a pig with wings.
Oh, hey.
Oh, no.
Okay, it is time. It is... Blah.
What sound was that?
Blah.
It's a fish.
It's a fish.
It's a fish.
It looks very much like a pinecone nose goober fish.
It does look like a pinecone nose goober
like
fish.
Like a sucker fish. Like a Placo pinecone nosed
goober fish.
Goober fish.
What does it look like from the side?
It's like bottom feeding. I'm such an idiot with a film camera. I don't know. It just kind of looks like a blob to me, but...
Here. I think it totally looks like a fish.
Okay. What does that mean?
According to our sheet, it means... Where was that? Gaming / gambling luck.
Oh, shit. We gotta go to Wendover.
Yeah, we do.
We gotta go to Wendover this weekend then.
It's time. Gotta go gamble.
Okay, is that your whole reading?
I guess. Sweet.
So, Ella's gonna go gamble. I don't know if my getting a dick is really gonna be representative of what things are like for me. Maybe it's because I'm always getting fucked. But Elle got a lucky gooberfish. You just touched your face again. You just touched your face again. Elle's gonna go wash her face again.
God damn it.
Thank you for listening. This was our attempt at metallurgy.
Hit us up on Patreon and Elle will do a reading for you on the show using whatever divination method we're covering. Patreon.com/Mancy. Also, if you like the show, please share with your friends. The more support we have, the more episodes we can make. If you like my writing, you can pick up books at rjwalkerpoet.com.
If you wanted to get a reading from me, you can find me on Etsy at Laurels of Lux. You can find me on most social medias at Laurels of Lux. If you wanted to follow our podcast, you can find us on all social medias at Mancy Podcast or Mancy Pod. Hit us up. Don't forget, you can donate any amount to our Venmo and RJ will give you a free fake tarot reading.
Yeah, that's
a free fake tarot reading for a donation. I don't know.
Yeah, at dollar compliments on Venmo, and I will just pull a card for you and make up some bullshit about it.
Yeah.
The music was provided by, in order of appearance, Hayden Fulker, Arthi Vinka, Miyu, and Scott Buckley.